Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is still rainy, foggy, and misty, 45 degrees outside. Out at the airport, they are showing 97% humidity, east winds up to 20 miles per hour, and they're up to 3 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for more rain today, rain tonight, rain tomorrow, and rain is likely for the rest of the week, too. Rain could be heavy at times today, and look for areas of fog to hang around for another hour or so. Coming up on the Midday Report, Senator Dan Sullivan was among a group of senators who held up the bill to avoid defaulting on the federal debt to ask for more money for the military. That story and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Climate warming greenhouse gases in our planet's atmosphere are still climbing to levels Earth has not experienced in millions of years. NPR's Nathan Rott takes a closer look at what's been uncovered so far by scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as well as Scripps Institution of Oceanography at UC San Diego.
The month of May, before plant growth really takes off in the Northern Hemisphere, is typically when climate warming carbon dioxide emissions peak in the Earth's atmosphere. It's a month when scientists and federal agencies like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration take stock to see where the world is at in cutting emissions. A new report from NOAA says this May saw the fourth largest increase in year-to-year measurements to date. Carbon dioxide levels are now 50% higher than they were at the start of the Industrial Revolution. Scientists say cutting the use of fossil fuels and transitioning to renewable energy sources like wind and solar is the quickest way to slow the trend. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
About 250 miles above Earth, the International Space Station is waiting for another supply delivery. Brendan Byrne of member station WMFE in Orlando reports a cargo ship took off from Florida's Kennedy Space Center to meet up with the seven crew members aboard the orbiting outpost.
SpaceX launched more than 7,000 pounds of cargo to the station atop its Falcon 9 rocket. The capsule is packed with science experiments and supplies for the crew currently on board. It also includes new solar panels for the station, which will increase the orbiting lab's power capacity.
WMFE's Brendan Byrne reporting. On the battlegrounds between Ukraine and Russia, troops backed by Kyiv are waging a guerrilla-style campaign against their rivals across the border. NPR's Greg Myrie reports rebel fighters appear to have caught Russia by surprise.
The rebel fighters are conducting operations in several small towns and villages in the southern Russian region of Belgorod. Over the past several days, they've taken a number of prisoners and exposed Russian vulnerabilities along its border with Ukraine. Ukraine supports the fighters, who are Russians opposed to the rule of Russian leader Vladimir Putin. Many analysts see these skirmishes as part of a larger effort to attack Russian troops on multiple fronts. Separately, Russia claimed it beat back a Ukrainian offensive in the eastern Donbas region, but Ukraine dismissed the Russian reports as untrue. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Kyiv.
Well, the president of Ukraine delivered a nightly video address in which he says his government has received news it's been waiting for troops who've been fighting in and around the eastern city of Bakhmut. But Volodymyr Zelensky reportedly offered no further details. The Russian military claims it foiled a major offensive against its forces in eastern Ukraine. The Dow is down 11 points at the close. This is NPR.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The U.S. Senate passed a bill to avoid defaulting on the federal debt on Thursday. But it stalled for a few hours when a group of senators, including Alaska's Dan Sullivan, argued the bipartisan agreement doesn't spend enough on the military. Sullivan says these are dangerous times.
Authoritarian dictators with immense appetite for conquest are on the march. And yet, what does this budget agreement do? It cuts defense spending significantly.
The agreement increases next year's defense spending by 3.3%, which is below the level of inflation. Sullivan was in a group of six Republican senators who took to the Senate floor on Thursday to argue the defense spending level was too low. Sullivan tried to amend the bill by moving $18 billion from the Internal Revenue Service to the Pentagon.
The choice is clear. More Navy ships, soldiers, and Marines to protect America, or more IRS agents to harass Americans.
Sullivan's amendment needed 60 votes to pass and got only 49. The compromise bill already cuts into the funding boost Congress gave the IRS last year. The Biden administration says the agency needs the money to modernize and crack down on wealthy tax cheats. Sullivan voted against the bill to avoid default. Senator Lisa Murkowski voted for it. One of the country's largest dairy cooperatives is shrinking the size of one of its cartons, and that's going to mean one less option for thousands of Alaskans enrolled in the federal nutrition program, WIC. Dairy Gold's ultra-pasteurized 64-ounce cartons are now 59 ounces, meaning WIC participants can no longer buy the product with their checks, e-cards, or vouchers. WIC participants in rural Alaska already contend with high prices and limited food options. For example, in Bristol Bay, the cost of milk is about twice the national average. And at times, Dairy Gold is the only milk brand on store shelves in Dillingham, the region's hub. Walter Pickett is the Vice President of Operations for the Alaska Commercial Company, or AC, a chain of grocery stores that serve rural Alaska and sell Dairy Gold milk. He says AC searched for other vendors without success.
And the closest alternative that we found is in California, and with the cost of freight from California to the port of Tacoma, which is where we ship all of our freight to Alaska, it was not deemed a cost-effective alternative.
In Dillingham, AC is one of two grocery stores. Their milk shipments travel from Washington State to Anchorage, then arrive via barge or plane. Importing groceries from farther away or even selecting differently sized products could affect shipping costs and raise sticker prices.
We looked at, you know, instead of half gallons, could we sell two quarts or four quarts for a gallon? The challenge there is the space required when you start shipping up quarts in place of half gallons.
Dairy Gold's change only affects ultra-pasteurized milk. Ultra-pasteurized milk lasts three times longer than other fresh milk products, a plus for perishables traveling to rural Alaska that spend significant time in transit. Pickett says AC asked Alaska's congressional delegation to try to change the federal standards so that WIC participants could buy the new sized milk, and that process is ongoing. In a written statement, Dairy Gold said the size change was in response to rising production costs. This is known as shrinkflation, and the phenomenon has become increasingly common around the world. Teenagers from all over rural Alaska were in Anchorage last week learning about nicotine addiction. Although smoking rates have gone down in the state, many teenagers are vaping instead. The training was run by Rural Community Action Program, or RuralCAP, and the people running the training are high schoolers themselves. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra stopped by the conference and has this story.
I just wanted to introduce everyone to everyone because we're going to be spending the next couple days together and I want us to be comfortable.
That's Roey Armstrong. She's 17 years old and has been a teen ambassador for RuralCAP for 3 years.
Okay, so I'm just going to show this video that I made a couple years ago.
This year, 15 teens and tweens are joining the training. It's the seventh year of the program. Rural Cap flew in youth from around the state, including White Mountain, Chivec, and New Stuyahok. Peer relationships are really important to teenagers, so the aim is to educate teens on the real costs of addiction so they can teach each other, and hopefully that will create a healthy kind of peer pressure. Lena Adais is 16 and is also helping run the conference. She says learning from other teens can be powerful.
We hear things from adults like every minute, every second of our day. And for somebody your own age to warn you about something, I feel like it's more relatable.
Tobacco and vaping industries have historically targeted ads toward young people for a reason. The vast majority of regular adult smokers started before they were 18. In Alaska, almost half of high school students have tried vaping, and one in four have tried cigarettes. Adais and Armstrong have learned a lot in their 3 years. They can rattle off a string of facts about addiction.
An addiction can be formed in 10 seconds. That's like all it takes.
How advertisers and companies manipulate kids.
These big companies, they see young children being brought into the world and they see a dollar sign.
The harms of vaping.
It's like, oh, it's just some flavored air, when it's really like chemicals and metals going into your lungs.
And why young people are so vulnerable to addiction.
And, like, I sound like my mom, but your prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until you're, like, 26.
That may be a phrase a mom or teacher would use, but Armstrong has gotten really good at sharing information in a relatable way, and that's the point. Charlie S. heads Rural Cap's peer educator program. He says he relies on teens like Armstrong because belonging is so important at their age.
They have that relatability, and they have what we call street creds. They have street credibility with their peers. And so they tend to get the attention of young people a lot better than an old guy like me.
In some areas of the state, teens are likely to have tried chewing tobacco or ikmik, which is a tobacco and ash mix common in Yupik culture. But S says vaping is common all over. And since it's still new technology, we don't know the long-term health effects yet.
We don't know what vapes. We know there's metals in them. We know there's vegetable oils in them. There's all kinds of things that aren't something you would put in your body ordinarily, but they're going in there now because of the vapes.
But the fruit and dessert flavors of e-cigarettes can make vaping seem harmless. And Adais says she has to work against the messages of social media posts that make vaping look cool. For example, people will share videos of tricks they can do when they exhale.
You also see the side of TikTok that it's like people showing off their cool ghosts with their vapes, and it's like, oh.
Adais says kids sell vapes over social media too, but she says social media can also help people quit. She says she's seen powerful videos from people posting about just that.
I'll just be scrolling, and then I'll see this girl like putting a bunch of vapes in a cup of water, and I'm like, what is she doing? And then she was like, and then it's like, I'm quitting, guys. Day three. It's hard.
Out of the 15 kids at the conference, Armstrong hopes a few of them will want to become peer educators like her eventually. But she says even if they decide not to, they can make a difference.
At least they have this information. They can go back to their probably small like communities and small villages and share it.
With all their training, Armstrong and Adais know they can't make anyone stop vaping or say no to trying a cigarette. They can just give people the info they've learned and hope it sticks. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Aquaculture, or mariculture, is a fledgling industry in Alaska with big potential. The federal government announced on Thursday it plans to help identify areas of Alaska state waters best suited for shellfish and marine plant farms. KSTK's Sage Smiley has this report.
Alaska has so much coastline, it's just a few thousand miles shy of being able to wrap around the Earth twice. And the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, wants to help the state of Alaska identify areas along its coast best suited for growing marine plants and shellfish. Danielle Blacklock is the director of NOAA Fisheries Office of Aquaculture.
As a complement to wild harvested seafood, aquaculture, or mariculture, is vital for supporting our nation's coastal communities and feeding our growing population. In a changing climate, we must look to the ocean for sustainable food, as foods from the sea are good for people, good for the planet, and good for the economy.
It's a somewhat new endeavor for NOAA. They're already working to identify what they call aquaculture opportunity areas, or AOAs, in Southern California and the Gulf of Mexico, but those are in federal waters.
Alaska presents a really exciting opportunity to show how dynamic this planning process can be.
During a press call June 1st, Blacklock said this will be the first partnership focusing on state waters, within 3 miles of Alaska's coastline specifically. It'll require collaboration between state and federal agencies.
So that means a true partnership with the state.
Blacklock says Alaska's plan will focus solely on marine invertebrates and macroalgae, since farming finfish in state waters is illegal. She explained NOAA will use environmental, economic, and cultural data to determine the size and location for potential aquaculture development zones.
They will produce a peer-reviewed aquaculture opportunity atlas that shares this data and the resulting maps with the public.
Blacklock says the decision to look into aquaculture opportunities in Alaska comes after public support from Alaska Native organizations, multiple arms of the Alaska state government, and fisheries stakeholders during public comment in 2020. State officials are publicly welcoming the collaboration. They say the rapid increase in aquaculture projects in Alaska necessitates collaboration and new innovative solutions. Sam Raybung is the head of commercial fisheries for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, which oversees operational permits for aquatic farms in Alaska. The state's ambitious goal envisions a $100 million mariculture industry in Alaska by 2040.
The collaborative effort necessary to establish aquaculture opportunity areas will provide an opportunity for agencies and stakeholders to ensure important current uses and activities are identified and considered in advance.
Raybung says a large part of evaluating permit applications is evaluating their proposed locations. Although no areas are off limits, having predetermined opportunity areas will help streamline the process, which involves an aquatic land lease from the State Department of Natural Resources and an operational permit from ADF&G.
We're not interested in leasing or permitting an area that's going to create a conflict. And to me, that's the biggest value of this exercise, is we're going to identify areas of potential conflict in advance so people don't play wrong guess when they are applying for farm sites.
The announcement comes as Alaska is moving to bolster its mariculture industry from within. A bill signed into law by Governor Mike Dunleavy last July expands permitting for farming shellfish like crab, razor clams, or abalone. There's also interest in the environmental benefits of aquatic plants as a way to fight climate change. NOAA plans to finance the science and public outreach through funding already appropriated specifically for use in aquaculture. State agencies will operate within their existing budgets. Plus, there is funding headed for Alaska mariculture, a $49 million grant cluster from the federal government, more than $25 million for mariculture research from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council, and a $5 million mariculture matching grant from the state legislature. Next is outreach within Alaska communities and organizations. This planning process may take upwards of 3 years, but Blacklock says it's all to feed the growth of a productive and sustainable mariculture industry in Alaska. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Homer thought its possum problem was over last week when a police officer grabbed Grubby. But now biologists say the female fugitive's litter is on the lam. Jason Harriman with the Department of Fish and Game says Grubby's son was captured alive near Homer City Hall on Thursday. Another young possum has been sighted in town, and Harriman says more are likely to be at large.
Possums typically have litter size of, say, 8 to 9. They've been known to have as many as 13. So there's probably a few individuals out there that we're trying to track down.
Possums don't live in Alaska, making Grubby and her babies an invasive species. It wasn't known that Grubby had given birth until recently. She was thought to be solo when she showed up in Alaska in March after hitching a ride in a shipping container from Washington State. And she caused quite a stir. Fish and Game wanted her caught. It took almost 2 months, but eventually police corralled her into a garbage can and she was sent to the Alaska Zoo in Anchorage. Then people in Homer started spotting her babies. Harriman says the one caught yesterday appears to be 3 to 4 months old, which means Grubby likely arrived in Alaska pregnant.
These guys are to the size and age where they should be able to make it on their own just fine, particularly with the conditions we have in Homer and where they're at in town.
Harriman said the young possums pose the same concerns that Grubby herself did, ranging from spreading infectious diseases to eating indigenous animals. He's worried about them multiplying.
There's plenty of food sources for them. The weather's warm, so unfortunately that gives them a good chance of getting a foothold and establishing a population if we don't manage to track all these guys down pretty quick.
Homer's Animal Shelter has urged pet owners to keep their animals indoors during the live trapping efforts to capture the young possums. Homer police are asking residents to report if they see any grubby offspring and say the animals will have a home after they're captured. 7 stellar sea lions were shot in Cordova last month, and investigators are offering a reward for information that could lead to the shooter. A statement from NOAA Fisheries says the sea lions were discovered in the Copper River Delta near Cordova on May 16th by members of the agency's Protected Resources Division. The Copper River Commercial Fishery opened just a day earlier. NOAA says the sea lions appear to have been shot with no evidence of an attempt to harvest or salvage them. Stellar sea lions are federally protected under the Endangered Species Act, and killing marine mammals like sea lions is also a violation of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. NOAA is offering a $5,000 reward for any information leading to, quote, civil penalty or criminal conviction, close quote, in the shootings. You can call the investigating agent at 907-250-5188. A NOAA law enforcement spokesperson declined to comment further on the ongoing investigation.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. GCI is a participant in the Affordable Connectivity Program, providing qualifying Alaska households entry-level broadband internet. More information at gci.com/ACP.
Is it real or made by AI? I'm Kristen Schwab with the Marketplace Minute. The European Union wants platforms like Google, Meta, and TikTok to label text, photos, and other content generated by artificial intelligence to combat disinformation. Europe has taken the lead on regulation with its AI Act, which governs the technology based on risk. The Biden administration is giving out $570 million in grants to fix dozens of dangerous railroad crossings across the U.S. The money will go towards building bridges and underpasses at stretches without safe crossings and where traffic delays are long. Nearly 250 people died last year at railroad crossings. Airlines have more than doubled their forecasts for profits this year. Revenue is expected to grow by nearly 10%, but companies are worried that rising demand could lead to travel delays. I'm Kristen Schwab with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Raymond James, Wealth Management Banking and Capital Markets. Disclosures at RaymondJames.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 5th day of June, the year 2023. Sun rose today at 5:14. It will set again at 11:03, giving us 17 hours and 49 minutes of daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 16 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 31 degrees set in 1973, and a record high was 77 set last year. Currently 45 degrees, and it's rainy and foggy. The winds have picked up a bit. They are showing east winds to 20 miles per hour at the airport right now, as well as 97% humidity, and they are up to 3 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the day, and that rain could be heavy at times. The fog is supposed to lift a little bit. High near 50 today, east winds to 20, gusting to 25. Rain tonight and tomorrow too. Low around 44 overnight tonight, southeast winds to 15. High near 47 tomorrow, southeast winds to 15. And rain is likely for the rest of the week, at least until Sunday, when they're talking about just a chance of rain. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles offshore. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. East winds to 30 knots today and seas to 9 feet. For tonight, south winds to 20 knots and seas to 9 feet. And then for tomorrow, east 20, seas to 9 feet. Looking at the offshore waters for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, 15 to 85 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through Tuesday, east winds to 30 knots and seas to 10 feet. For tonight, offshore, south winds to 20 knots, seas to 10 feet. And for tomorrow, southeast 20, seas to 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning today, east winds to 35 knots in the Shelikof, seas to 9 feet. East 25 tonight, becoming southeast 15 after midnight, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow, on our west side, northeast 25, seas to 5 feet. A little closer to home, looking in Chiniac Bay, small craft advisory for today, east 25, seas to 9 feet in Chiniac Bay. For tonight, southeast 20 and seas to 4 feet. Southeast 15 tomorrow, seas to 4 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, small craft advisory today, east 25 and seas to 10 feet up in Marmot Bay. For tonight, southeast 20, seas to 7 feet, coming down to 4 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, east winds to 15 knots and seas to 4 feet in Marmot Bay. This summer, the Kodiak Public Library's Summer Reading Challenge has a theme, Find Your Voice. Our voices have power. Log the minutes you read and write book reviews and participate in activities to complete the challenge. It runs through August 30th. Sign up at kodiak.beanstack.org, or you can just stop by the library. And the library's escape room returns for the summer beginning tomorrow. Daily time slots are available except on Mondays. Call now to check availability and reserve your spot. Open to all ages, but children under 14 must be accompanied by an adult. Groups of four are recommended. Call the library at 907-486-8686 to reserve a spot. And a special treat on Saturday at 1 p.m., join local musician Ellamy Tiller for some songwriting at the library. This program offers a creative and inspiring platform to learn the craft of telling your story through music. It's for ages 14 and above. Call the library once again at 907-486-8686 to sign up. On Wednesdays at 3:30, the library offers their famous Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Thursdays at 10:30, the library hosts Lap Sit Storytime. It's for babies 0 to 3 and their adults. Join volunteer Abby Hanna to share a story and a song with some quality time to play and socialize. And don't forget, every Saturday they have library hive checks at 10:15 a.m. Kids under 5 must watch from inside. Children under 13 must be supervised by a parent or guardian. If you've already attended a live check, please wait until Friday to sign up so that newcomers have a chance. Again, that library phone number, 486-8686. Library hours are Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Speaking of the library, their Kodiak Public Library Association's Board of Directors meets tomorrow at the Public Library's Multipurpose Room at 5:30 p.m. The public is welcome to attend, and the agenda will be posted on their website, which is at kpla.us. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include tomorrow's meeting of the Women's Bay Area Service Board. They're having their regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow. The Assembly will be having a special meeting on Thursday, followed by a work session. That's happening in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday. Both of these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office with any questions at 907-486-9310. And remember, Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough's YouTube channel. If you sign up, you can get live-stream notifications. And finally, Kodiak High School class of 1973 is attempting to get together for a reunion dinner on September 2nd. If you know class of 73 members who would like to attend, get them to call Janelle at 425-879-7067 or Terry at 907-654-7713 and help spread the word. Also, for more information, you could visit their website, which is at myevent.com/Kodiak73.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.